It's time for the Outdoor Show with Craig Compo on KFAR Radio 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Also streaming live at KFARradio.com. Sponsored by the Compo Family, helping Alaskans having fun in the outdoors since the 1940s. And now your host, Craig Compo.
I need to speak with the chief.
Who's calling, sir?
It's R.D. Mercer about a problem I had with one of y'all's officers.
Okay, Mercer?
Yeah, M-E-R-C-E-R.
Okay.
Yeah.
M-E-R-C-E-R. Hold on just a moment.
Yeah.
Yes.
Listen, my name is R.D. Mercer, and we had us a problem last night with one of y'all's officers over here.
Over where?
Here in town. He stopped my little stepdaughter last night for a burnout taillight. And he said that he wouldn't write her a ticket if she had agreed to go on a date with you. And I ain't gonna stand for it.
Well, by God, I don't believe that.
What's he doing down there trying to work up a date with my stepdaughter?
No, you bring your daughter in here and sign this, and sign a formal complaint, and we'll get him here.
I ain't gonna do it. I'm coming down there to whoop somebody's ass.
You come in and bring her in.
I'm bringing myself down there with about a 55-gallon drum of whoop ass, and I'm gonna open it on y'all.
No. You better not do that.
I guarantee you she done engaged to marry a feller over down in Broken Bow.
Fella, I don't even know what you're talking about. Are you talking in Broken Bow or Ida Bell?
Ida Bell. She's in Ida Bell. She's going to marry a boy, Joe Biffle. You know Joe Biffle?
No, I don't know Joe Biffle.
He's a double diamond Amway distributor down there in Broken Bow.
You bring her in to find a complaint.
I ain't doing it. I'm coming down there today, and I'm going to find that fella, and I'm going to find y'all.
You better have your facts straight.
Well, I guarantee you, that's what she told me.
Well, bring her in and let her face him, okay?
No, she's too upset about it. She's been sexually harassed down there.
Bring her in and let her face him.
I ain't gonna do it. She done talked to him last night, and I'm PO'd about it.
Well, I'm a little PO'd the way you're talking.
Well, I guarantee you, somebody...
I'd bring my daughter in, though, and let her face him.
You'd be PO'd if it's your daughter,
I'd
wouldn't you?
I'd bring her in, though, too.
Well, I ain't gonna do it. I'm coming down there. She ain't never lied to me, and I don't think she's gonna start now. Badge or no badge, somebody's gonna get ass with
her. You bring her in and let her face him.
You ever had an ass whooping?
Who?
You.
Fella, don't be calling, threatening me on the phone.
Are you a single man or are you a married man?
I've got a daughter, 27.
Well, and by God, do you understand how come I got
and
some money?
And by God, I'd bring her in.
I guarantee you, I ain't gonna do it.
Well, then don't come down here raising hell.
I'm coming down there to whoop somebody's ass here in about a New York minute.
Well,
and I tell you what,
you better get your stuff straight.
Well, I ain't gonna have to have it straight when I come down there.
Yeah, you are.
She got a big bachelorette party tonight, and she's gonna be tore up and ain't gonna be able to have it. I was gonna get somebody dressed up like a state trooper and strip for her.
You better get your stuff together.
His name is John Kaufman. He's coming down here to do that. He's going to strip down to a ammo belt in a nightclub.
Who in the hell is this?
I think your brother wanted to pull a joke on you.
I think he did.
Well, he's fixing to pull one.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well...
That's the first time my blood pressure's been up, and I don't know when.
Are you okay, Jim?
I was fixing to go get my damn pistol, and we was gonna play gunfight to OK Corral.
Do not forsake me, my darling.
Now, my secretary come back here and said, "Who are you yelling at? What's going on?"
All right, that's R.D. Mercer and the police chief. Yeah, that's a good one. He's one of my favorite. Favorite old comedy shows, R.D. Mercer. I think I've probably played most of them by now, but that's one you may not have heard. And speaking of police, we have a special guest in the studio today. We're going to talk a little bit about a couple things. He doesn't know some of it we're going to talk about yet, but throw your headset on there, Mr. Satterberg. Local attorney Bill Satterberg stopping by the studios here. How you doing, Bill?
Good.
Pull your mic up here. Oh, hang on. I got to turn your mic on. There you go. Hello. Oh, you got to plug the other. Maybe is that one on? It's not plugged in. Oh, you got to plug it in. Hang on. We're technical difficulties here. I don't know who had the studio last. Probably Pruse. I'll blame it on Pruse. Try talking into that one. Does that work?
I don't know.
Yeah, let's see. Here we go. We're getting set up. Testing. 1, 2, 3.
No.
And that's plugged in? Well, we're having problems. Oh, here we go. Now try that.
Try this.
Test. There you go. I had to turn the.
Can you hear me now? I can hear myself.
Yeah, you can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, don't fiddle with the mic, though.
All you folks out in radio land, somebody call in and see if you can hear me.
Yeah. All right, Bill. So I brought you in to talk about a kind of infamous case. But before we do that, I printed off. I just wanted your opinion on some of these police blotter stories. I printed off a few of them. And I know you always tell people if you get pulled over, what do you tell them? Don't.
If you're not talking to the cops, you can't lie to the
right,
cops.
Right, okay. So some of these I just thought were humorous. I went through. Don't touch that. You're making all kinds of static there. Yeah, don't touch the mic.
I've been known to make static for
years.
Yeah,
you know that. All right, so I'm not going to use their full name, but this is Ryan M. 52 of Fairbanks. Now, most of these are probably your clients. You could probably guess who they are. Was charged October 3rd with felony driving under the influence, refusal to submit a chemical test, and misdemeanor leaving the scene of an accident. According to documents, Ryan M. reportedly hit two road signs at the intersection of Blaine Road and Ashburn Road. A GMC Yukon Grill was later found at the scene of the crash. A trail of engine fluids led to where parked in the middle of Yankovic Road with his lights off and unconscious behind the wheel.
Excuse me.
Oh, did I say his name?
Yeah, you did.
Whoops. Okay. Ryan M. Had reportedly had bloodshot, watery eyes, smelled like alcohol, was slurring his speech, and had poor motor skills. He told troopers he, quote, hit a Sasquatch and was just trying to get home. McMurray declined to participate in standard field sobriety tests and refused to provide a breath sample. Trooper obtained a warrant for his blood. So have you ever heard that one before? He hit Sasquatch?
I heard there was a Sasquatch once out at the Mushers Field.
Oh, yeah. That was me.
Oh, that was you running around in that jacket. No, I haven't heard the Sasquatch defense. Okay. It's a good one, though. I think I might use it.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, I love it when they you read these. I love reading the police blotter. They tell people, I had a couple of drinks, and then they do the blood alcohol. So I want you to do the math and tell me if this is physically possible. Curtis N., 48 of Esther, was charged October 3rd with misdemeanor driving under the influence after troopers saw a car driving on South Cushman without its headlights and taillights on. According to documents, Curtis N. reportedly had bloodshot eyes and was slurring his speech. He told troopers he had a couple of shots of liquor earlier that day before going to sleep, waking up, and heading to the gas station for food. He failed a standardization field sobriety test and had a breath alcohol content of 0.228. Two shots?
Big ones.
Yeah, I guess they didn't say what size shots. A quart?
Yeah, a howling dog pour.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, yeah, I just thought that, man, I love it when everybody had a couple, right? Just had a couple.
Yeah.
Parker R. Of North Pole charged with misdemeanor driving under the influence, misdemeanor violating bail conditions after North Pole police reported a car almost drove off the ridge in a construction zone, swerved across the road, and was tailgating a car. According to the reports, Parker reportedly smelled of alcohol, had bloodshot, watery eyes, was slurring his speech. Parker declined to participate in standardization field sobriety tests. When police took Parker to North Pole to obtain a breath sample, he reportedly said, "I want to save us some time. I am massively intoxicated." He reportedly had a breath alcohol content of 0.258. So is that... Is being honest a good thing or just being quiet?
That's actually kind of standard for North Pole, the breath alcohol content.
258?
Yeah. What's the meth content?
Yeah, right. Well, that'll read zero, though, right?
Well, yeah, with the pot content out at Esther, of course, you got to check. And, of course, you got the crack content also elsewhere in this city.
Well, I was going to ask you one time, do they not have a device that accurately measures other substances? It always says 0.00, which...
Right, triple zeros.
Yeah, which, you know, yeah, there's no alcohol in your blood, but there's meth and heroin or whatever else.
Yeah,
carbohydrates. Are they getting anywhere with that? I mean, you'd think that with this technology, you'd be able to determine that.
I'm not aware of any testing device yet. It's interesting. For marijuana, only two states in the country right now, Washington and Colorado, actually have a limit, 5 nanograms per milliliter of marijuana. If you're over that, you're inferred to be under the influence of marijuana. Oh. But the other states don't really have that. And there's really no way of testing as well as far as whether or not a person is. When they come up with a reading, they can't say that a particular reading is or is not under the influence.
So if somebody did 10 bong hits of super strong weed and then head on and kills
back to high school.
Kills somebody in a head on because they totally out of it. And when you go to court, is that an easier case to try if you're that defense attorney versus an alcohol-related one where you have the hard numbers?
It depends. If people are not doing the field sobriety tests, which they're not legally required to do, it makes it much more difficult. Like I tell people, if you're in contact with the police, I mean, be polite, first of all. Realize that, you know, you don't want to get yourself in trouble with that situation. But like I tell them, you know, if you're in a situation, the officer comes up and says, how much have you had to drink? The answer I would suggest people give is, I'm not going to answer that question. Not two beers.
You're not lying.
Yeah, no, Ossifer. But
yeah.
I'd just say I'm not going to answer those questions. I want to call my lawyer, whomever the lawyer is. If they say you don't have to take off your sunglasses at that point in time, you don't have to turn off full gospel radio KGMP on 10,
yeah.
And you don't have to spit out your chewing tobacco. If the officer comes back and says, would you please step out of the car? I say, well, wait a minute. Are you asking me or are you ordering me? I'm asking you, would you please step out of the car? No, just give me my ticket if I have a ticket coming. Of course, your window's only down about 4 or 5 inches.
Right.
And if he says, okay, you're free to go, well, that's when you get on the phone. If you have been doing anything, call up your local tow truck company for less than what I charge for a consultation. It'll give a person a ride home. They get to take their car and the driver home, drop them off in the front seat or front yard, and on the way home, they get to meet a meth dealer.
Okay. All right, here we got 19-year-old Zachary C., of Charlton, Massachusetts, charged October 12th, misdemeanor driving.
Not one of my clients.
Yeah. Misdemeanor driving under the influence after North Pole police saw a silver Audi speeding 55 in a 25 zone off Badger Road. Car reportedly drove over the roundabout on Santa Claus Lane. According to court documents, Zach reportedly smells like alcohol, had watery eyes, and was slurring his speech. Zach denied drinking and told police that he drove over the roundabout because his GPS had not told him there was a roundabout there. He failed the test with a .098, so not hammered.
No,
but
you know the best advice I can give: don't drink and drive. I mean, that's the best advice. Don't smoke and drive.
Yeah,
that doesn't mean people follow that advice. Yeah. But needless to say, I think one of the problems is we don't know what our blood alcohols are, and so a person is a seasoned drinker. I can't imagine anybody in particular in this room.
Yeah.
They're not going to know what they're blowing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good advice.
And then ask for a urine test.
Yeah. Spencer L., 27, charged Saturday with misdemeanor, fourth degree. Oh, this is a different one. Sexual abuse of a minor. According to documents, Spencer is accused of inappropriately touching a teenage girl at his rental property and told cops that his wife had just had a baby and his needs were not being met at home.
Can't comment.
Okay, next. N. Harris of Fairbanks was charged of two counts of misdemeanor driving under the influence. According to documents, troopers saw a black Subaru driving without its lights on Chino Hot Springs Road. Nathan reportedly had glossy, watery eyes and slurring his speech and smelled like alcohol.
Did you say glossy or glassy?
What does it say? Did I say it's glossy? Sorry, wow. I had some drinks this morning.
I was about to say, I was wondering what the smell was in here.
He told troopers he drank a couple beers several hours before, failed sobriety tests and a breath alcohol of 0.237. After troopers told him his blood alcohol contact, he reportedly said, "How am I still walking?" Again,
scientific.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. On these stops, the reports always say, the glassy, watery eyes.
Right.
Always.
It's bloodshot, watery eyes.
Yeah, yeah. Is that just common?
Almost a liturgy. I mean, they bloodshot, watery eyes, smell commonly associated with the consumption of alcoholic beverages.
Yeah.
Difficulty in finding the driver's license, fumbling for this and that. It's kind of a routine.
Okay. Well, I just always
things they look for, of course. You know, I mean, like what was Ron White said, they were profiling. You know, the police were profiling me. They were pulling over everybody driving on the sidewalk.
Yeah. There's
a right to remain silent, but not the ability.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, we're going to be back in 90 seconds, and I want to talk about the Joe Vogler case. We're going to do the 15-minute version of that story with Bill Satterberg.
It's going to take longer than 15.
Okay, well, we'll do part of it then. All right, we'll be back.
The Compos Outdoor Show on KFAR Radio will return right after this.
For more than 75 years, the go-to outdoor business in Fairbanks has been Compo's. Bob Compo Sr. first opened the doors on 12th and Cushman in 1945. A lot has changed since then, but one thing hasn't changed. Compo's passion for getting you outdoors and away from the rat race and their business philosophy can be wrapped up in a few words Bob Sr. used to say. And that's, treat people right and they'll tell a few others. Treat them poorly and they'll tell a few dozen. Compo, on Boat Street, doing business in Fairbanks since Harry Truman was president.
How do you get the smoking best deal in town on just about anything? On 50-50 Fridays. Duh, that's how. 50-50 Fridays partners together with your favorite local merchants to bring you great new deals of half-off savings. Simply go to this station's website and click on the 50-50 Fridays button at the top of the page to see what new deal is being offered each week. Get ready to score your half-off deals on such items as dining out, entertainment, services, activities, events, and even more. Shop 50-50 Fridays. You'll spend less. You'll have more. And even if it isn't Friday, be sure to check back with the 50-50 Fridays page regularly, where you can discover unclaimed half-off deals that may still be available. Every 50-50 Fridays week, you'll hear about the upcoming offer daily on 8 of the most listened to radio stations in the interior. Can your business benefit from a week of saturated, enthusiastic promotion on 8 radio stations? The answer is yeah, it sure. Why wouldn't it? Talk to us. 50-50 Fridays, brought to you by the radio station, your local family of radio stations.
Spend your Saturdays with KFAR Radio for local programs, starting with Alaska Realty Today from Next Home Arctic Sun Realty at 11 a.m. The Buzz at 11:30, brought to you by the Tanana Herb Company, followed by Health Talk with Dr. Scott Looper from White Spruce Medical at noon, Compo's Outdoor Show at 12:30, Fairbanks Foodies at 1 p.m., Explore Fairbanks at 1:30, The Drive with Glacier Garage at 2 p.m., followed by Building Alaska with Jen Solar. Weekends just got local with KFAR Radio. And now, back to the Compo's Outdoor Show on KFAR Radio.
All right, welcome back. This is Craig with the Outdoor Show, and I've got Bill Satterberg in my office, in the studio. And Bill, you know, one of the most fascinating cases that I ever was involved with, or at least paid attention to, was the Joe Vogler murder. And, of course, you were the attorney for the Manfred West.
Correct, Freddie
West, yeah, who's still in jail.
Oh, yeah. He said that is like his second home.
Yeah. And before we start into that, because that's going to be a two-part series, we're going to just start it today, but next Saturday we'll finish it up. Because there's a lot of interesting detail. There's been documentaries on it and everything, but, you know, you always heard the phrase, you know, they know where the bodies are buried. Well, that should be the name of the show if Bill ever does a documentary, because Bill knew where the body was buried, and that's just a little teaser on it. But give us the what happened for those people that most people have heard of Joe Vogler. They know the story, but some don't. So just give us your rendition of what happened. We got about 10 minutes to start the story and how you got involved with it.
That's only 2/10 of an hour.
Yeah, okay. That's my, yeah, that's how you charge.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, basically several years ago, I was involved in the period of time when Governor Hickel ran on the Independence Party ticket for Joe Vogler's Independence Party ticket, I should say. And, you know, I got to know Joe that time. He used to come over to my office sometimes and sit back and tell me about the Constitution. And, of course, he had his own little, I'm going to call it almost a cult following, that, you know, Joe Vogler was going to do no wrong, you know, and, of course, upset with the United States government because doing anything wrong, but he drove his Mercedes on highways built by U.S. funds.
Right.
That being said, I got a call one day. I was actually on my way home from work. And I noticed that there was a big fire going on Farmers Loop Road. They had the road blocked off.
Because you live in that area.
I do, yeah. I live up in that area. And I was on my way home, and the road was blocked off. And the next day, I get a phone call and from a guy named Freddie West, who I did not know. He was in jail. His nickname was Cartoon Fred, because Freddie had spent a lot of time in jail for various, basically, theft-type crimes and stuff like that. And I can tell this story, by the way. I should preface this. We have strict rules of confidentiality in our business, but Freddie has given me a written waiver of confidentiality.
Okay.
And in fact, I've told this story not only on City Confidential, which was the television show that came out years ago, where the Lynette Clark and Dexter Clark and Mike Brock and others were convinced that the United Nations had Joe assassinated, mm-hmm. which was not the truth.
Yeah.
But secondly, I also went on a show called Murder Phone, one word, it's a podcast, where I spoke with a kid who was investigating serial killers and primarily the the guy that was down there, the Butcher Baker guy down in Anchorage. I forget what his name was now. But he was Freddie's cellmate down in Spring Creek before he died. And, So anyway, what happened is that I got a call from Freddie. He said, I've been arrested. Can you come see me? So I went down to jail and checked in, as we always do, and talked to Freddie and asked him what had happened. And what was interesting was that he had been under suspicion for having killed Joe Vogler. Basically, what had happened is that Freddie had been contacted by Joe, who wanted to get some plastic explosive for part of his ongoing campaign against the United States government or something. So Freddie had sold Joe some plastic explosive, which, for want of a better term, he picked up at probably Toys R Us. It was modeling clay, and I think he spiced it up with some aromatics, maybe kerosene or something, to make it smell kind of stuffy. And he had sold it to Joe and got a fair amount of money from Joe. And he got a call from Joe later and said, hey, I want to buy some more of that good plastic explosive. I need some more of that stuff. Well, Freddie had knew that the stuff he'd sold Joe was basically...
And was Joe doing that to get him back up there?
Yes. It was okay. Consumer protection violation on Freddie's part, and he should have reported him to Consumer Protection Division for selling modeling clay. So what happened is that Freddie went back up to Joe's house and came in, and Joe comes walking up to him. And this is where it gets really interesting. Joe came up, and he comes up to Freddie, and you SOB. Joe is rather colorful with his language. And he pulls out a little 25 caliber gun, which he always used to carry in his jacket pocket, that blue jacket Joe used to wear. Mm-hmm. And he takes a shot at Freddie, actually shoots at Freddie, and the bullet lodges in the door of Freddie's pickup truck. Well, Freddie had figured out that Joe probably was on to him, but maybe not. Maybe he just wanted more of that stuff and hadn't tried to set off the plastic explosive. maybe clay splattered all over the outside of his house. I don't know. So anyway, Joe takes a shot at Freddie. Freddie had brought with him a .38 caliber pistol, which he had on the driver's seat of the pickup truck that Freddie was in. Joe then pointed, this is according to Freddie, of course, because Joe can't tell us. Yeah. He then pointed the pistol at Freddie's face and pulled the trigger. The gun didn't go off. It was jammed with goose feathers or whatever, you know, from the Joe's linen, his jacket pocket or something. Can't speak English.
Yeah.
0.228, I guess.
Yeah.
The gun didn't go off, so Joe turns around, and he's walking away, and he's fiddling with the gun. He's trying to clear the jam in the gun, and Freddie takes a shot at him. And he misses. And Freddie said, there's still a bullet that's probably embedded in the logs of Joe's house up there on top of wherever Joe's subdivision was up there, Aspen Heights or something.
Yeah.
Interesting he'd called Aspen Heights since he cut down all the aspen trees.
Yeah, he did.
So Freddie shoots again. And this time he does hit Joe in the back of the head, and Joe goes down. Freddie said that at that point, he said, I got scared. I took off. And he drove down to the golf course, and he waited. He said, I waited for probably 20, 30 minutes, and no sirens, nothing responding at all, so he decided to go back up there, which he did. He said, I drove back up. The geese were honking, running all over the yard. Joe was laying in the driveway area.
Dead, obviously.
Oh, yeah, he definitely dead. What made you draw that conclusion?
Well, he could have been alive.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, what the heck, you know. Yeah. You're right. Anyway, so he wraps him up in a blue tarp, and he puts him in the back of the pickup truck, and he drives up to Jerry Ostro's property up at Chino Hot Springs Road. I think it's about 25, 26 mile.
Did he know Jerry?
I don't know if he knew Jerry or not, but he probably did because he knew the property. And he buried him out on Jerry Ostro's property. Shallow grave, of course. And
what time of year was it? Summer.
You don't bury him in the winter very easily.
Yeah, but I mean, fall, this was...
I can't tell you the exact date that happened, but it was in the summer.
Okay.
And I remember asking Freddie, I said, well, whatever happened to the fedora? Whatever happened to the fedora, Freddie?
Yeah.
He goes, that's the mystery, what happened to the fedora. You know, Freddie was always kind of a BSer, so realistically speaking, who knows what happened to the fedora? But obviously it's never been found. And then what happened after that, of course, is that nobody knew what had happened to Joe Vogler. He was missing. Some people said he had gone off to Canada, maybe to be with his wife, who had been buried in Canada. Maybe he had been out killed and buried on a tailings pile out in the gold mining areas. But it was a big, interesting issue because nobody knew.
Everybody was, where's Joe? Yeah.
Yeah, where's Joe?
And Danny Parrish and I found a body floating in the river that summer. And the first thing I thought, it was Vogler. Face down, nothing on but a belt and tennis shoes. And once I saw the tennis shoes, I knew it wasn't Vogler.
Was that the body out in front of Frank Murkowski's house?
Yeah. That's a whole other story there. Anyway, keep going.
Okay, so I got the call after the fire. And what it brought the fire about was that the investigator on this matter, a guy named Jim McCann, had, you know, been getting tips around town. Freddie was a pretty big talker, and the word around town was that Freddie had killed Joe Vogler. But, of course, they had no corpus delicti, no proof that Joe was dead. And, again, without a body and without knowing he's dead, it's just talk.
And what was the – I forget the timeline. How much time went by from when he was shot?
Several months, as I recall.
Yeah, okay.
I haven't – the file's been long since gone, so I don't know. We could look up the date that Freddie was arrested when they had the fire in North Pole, and we could take out the date that
– Wasn't it at least a year before all this happened? I thought it went into the next season.
It could have been. It was a long time. I know that. And, of course, everybody was – it probably was a long time, like a year. And so what happened is that McCann had a motorhome go out on Farmer's Loop Drive, and they've been going around, and Freddie had been staying in a log cabin, which is down there about 1.5 miles from the intersection of the Farmer's Loop of the Stees. The cabin's since burned down. We'll talk about that. But and the place is now a large equipment yard. I think Fairbanks Equipment or somebody owns it. Anyway, so this motorhome parked out on the highway there, and Freddie said, I looked out, and he said, I noticed this guy made a big noise, and he's slamming the hood of the car and throwing his hands up in the air and acting like, oh, my God, I'm so upset. And he grabs a gas can, and he starts walking down the road towards Farmer's Loop Union. Freddie says, I'm looking at that motorhome, and the drapes keep going back, sliding back. He says, I can tell somebody's inside. They're watching me. So I decide to, and I'll try to get to the point you want to wrap it up.
No, you got 3-4 minutes.
Okay. Yeah. Less than a tenth. Yeah. So Freddie decides, I'm going to make an issue out of this thing. So he gets two guns, and he straps them to his wrists. He's going to go out blazing saddles. He's going to run out the front door, and he's got these two guns duct taped to his hands. He's going to have a big shootout with the troopers because he's pretty sure there's troopers in there. And he goes out the door with these guns, and all of a sudden, a bunch of troopers come bailing out of the motorhome. And as soon as they come bailing out, Freddie takes a look, goes, oh, I've changed my mind, and he runs back in the cabin and locks the door. And so now we've got the troopers in the motorhome, and we got Freddie inside the cabin. Jim McCann is calling up, trying to talk Freddie into surrendering. Come on out, we're not going to shoot you, this and that. Freddie decides, hey, look, I'm going to probably get busted here. Freddie really had no intention of doing anything bad to himself. He just didn't want to come out. Of course, by then I was already representing Freddie.
Yeah.
Well, I shouldn't say that. He had just gotten arrested before that. I'm wrong in my sequencing there. But anyway, so Freddie decides he's going to burn all the marijuana and stuff that's in the house.
It wasn't legal at the time.
Not at all. So anyway, he lights a they have this wood stove in there that had a 6-inch pipe that went up and then made a right-hand turn and went across the bottom of this plywood ceiling and then went up and made another turn and went through the roof. Well, he lights the marijuana on fire, gets this good old fire going in the wood stove, and a chimney fire starts going, whoom, 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 and the pipe breaks loose from the ceiling and catches the house on fire.
Oh, God.
Interestingly enough, when they found Freddie, my old fire department, Steve's volunteer fire department, Mauto was surrounded and drowned, showed up. When they found Freddie, he was in the crawl space of the house. He was hypothermic. He almost was just about dead from hypothermia. And when they found him, they rescued him, put him in jail. And that's when I first met Freddie, was when I showed up and I met him in jail. When I saw him, he had his wrists taped. He had been trying to commit suicide with a piece of glass to slit his wrists.
In jail, yeah.
While he was in the fire.
Oh.
He was down in the crawl space.
Wow.
But the problem was, he kept cauterizing his wrists and stuff, and there's a way to slit your wrists, and he didn't figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to tell the readers how, and so I don't have any liability there. But so when I found Freddie, he was in there on an arson charge.
Wow.
That's probably a good spot to stop, actually.
Yeah, okay, well, that's fascinating. And there's a lot of details you just mentioned that I hadn't heard before, and you've told me this story before, so that's good, or I wasn't paying attention or something. But that's pretty interesting. Well, we're gonna do part two of the Joe Vogler story next Saturday, so you get to turn in. And it gets really interesting when everybody's asking, where's Joe? And one guy in this room knew where he was at.
I had a very good idea where he was at.
Yeah. All right, well, that's going to be the show for this week. We've got criminal defense attorney Bill Satterberg in the show.
You didn't say criminal attorney.
Yeah, criminal attorney. talking Joe Vogler and the Joe Vogler story. Was it 95? What year was that?
I don't know. We'll have to take a look at that.
Yeah, we'll look at that. Also, maybe we figure out how long it went. It seemed to me it was at least a year. God, it could have been longer than that. But anyway, we'll be back next Saturday and finish up the Joe Vogler story. This is Craig with the Outdoor Show. Thanks for tuning in. Have a good day.
You have been listening to The Outdoor Show with Craig Campo on KFAR Radio, streaming live at KFARradio.com. To listen back to this program or any past episodes, simply click on The Outdoor Show in the Archives tab on the website.